Welcome to Spiritual Cartel's Principle Meeting. This week we are looking at the principle of love. It is with great pleasure that Kimia has joined us. Kimia, floor is yours.
Thank you so much, Purdy, and everybody on the service team. I see a lot of spiritual cartels and spiritual gangsters in one room. We're definitely in completion of that spirituality and the kind of work we want to do. So thank you. Your presence is service to the service crew that keeps this meeting running every single evening. There's a lot of love put in this space. That's why we feel drawn to it. So welcome so many souls in the room. And I know that this recording will also reach the souls that are not here right now, but I want to recognize that it's important to recognize that this is getting passed on to others who may need to hear these words, who may also need to feel the energy that you have all brought in. It's important that you realize how potent you are in that energy and that ability to send love way after this meeting is done. So welcome. My name is Kimia. I'm humbled to be here to speak on this subject, and it's important to mention this. I am of no subject matter expertise on love. So let's relinquish that expectation that whatever it is that may be my opinion or feedback or understanding of this subject is perhaps dependent on that experience that I have had in my recovery. I will continue to reference the big book throughout this talk. It's important that I stay close to this literature. This literature is what keeps me in a better understanding of love, a better definition of love. A sordid and rather distorted definition of love brought me to the rooms of CA. I have to recognize that. There's humility as an understanding that these definitions and therefore the ideals are changing as a result of a program that allows me to have a higher understanding of what love is. Rather than the sick, twisted love towards a person, place, or thing that brings me to the gates of insanity and death very quickly. And in that definition of love can become a drug of choice very quickly. Today, I'm here to speak to a definition of love that goes beyond that. It is the eighth principle in the AA. It matches the step eight. In our step eight, we're getting ready. We have a list of those we have harmed. And we actually did the work in our step four. I want everyone to perhaps bring your attention that the very limitless concept of love is already built into all of the steps. It's already built into all of the principles from the way I see it, it does. And today I'm going to speak to a definition of love that is agape love. It embraces a profound sense of limitless love that transcends, and it persists regardless of circumstances. And I can best understand this agape love in the love that I have found in the power of a God that today I can call God. And I want to recognize that the word God might be something that is of sensitivity to you. You might bristle with this word. Today I've made my amends. I come from an agnostic atheist family. In fact, I'm the only person in my family that uses the word God. But I don't lead with the chin. A relationship with the higher power. This higher power is also regarded as love in the big book. And I will go over these pages so that we can start reading this book from that perspective. It's already embedded within the literature, and it gives us a really good understanding of what this agape love really is. And so the principle of love is not some kind of vague personal characteristic a person has. It becomes the habits, the actions, the thought life that we train ourselves to put into practice on a daily, because cultivating these habits create a profound satisfaction in our relationships. We get to go beyond the conditions. And so patience is one of those practices. Forgiveness is one of those practices. Respect, courtesy, generosity, honesty, everything that you find in your column five in your spiritual principles, they are of love. And love is complete and whole in that sense. I work out of a workbook that I am going to put in the chat. Anybody wants to pick this up? Sorry, Purdy, it went to you. You can put that in there. And there's a definition of agape love on page 32. Agape love being the unconditional love, the highest form of love. It's the spiritual love. It's physically relaxed. It's emotionally calm. It's mentally serene. It's spiritually centered. It's patient, it's responsible, it's active, it's intimate, it's generous, it's content, it's trusting, it's humbled, it's of helpfulness to others, it's unselfish, it's forgiving, it's honest. And these are all principles, right? And when I am in that agape love that today I get to receive from the one who defines all for me, God, I get to be of maximum helpfulness and usefulness to God and to my fellows. I get to make spiritual progress. I get to be recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And my siblings, don't be fooled. I'm just as crazy as everybody else in this room. And I have the same capacity to be as insane as anybody else is in this room. You know? Because my definition is once I start, I can't stop. And I have no control over how much I've taken. I don't forget that. I can speak love and right out of here, go right back into hate, anger, and resentment. Love has to be felt, lived, embodied. There's a way of living in this way of love. There's a way of allowing this helpfulness to continue to flow through me, because otherwise, others cannot be loved. Others cannot be introduced to this concept of limitlessness, that infiniteness, the unconditional nature of an everlasting activity, just like breath. One simple inhale, one simple exhale at a time. Just like God, one simple inhale, one simple exhale. You pick the verbiage. I replace the word God with love often, with kindness often, with forgiveness often, with patience, tolerance, and understanding often. And in that definition, love becomes a lot more reachable, accessible, believe it or not. Because the love that I try to attain in my sickness is full of conditions. I either take you hostage or I want to be taken hostage. I overlove, overcare, overachieve, overgive, and I have all kinds of expectations in return. So I'm always the victim, martyr, mother, manage, murder. Again, it doesn't start from all of us from that climax. We climax to a point of insanity. For me, that easily could be triggered. That phenomena of craving is triggered when I don't get what I want. And it has to do with something about a person, place, or a thing. The way you love me, the way you receive me, the way you talk to me, the way you understand me. It's very selfish. It's very sick in its nature because it just wants to attain and own. The only sense of ownership it has is by micromanaging others. It's dishonest, it's resentful, it's angry. Oh, that's my favorite drug of choice, all right? Anger. And it's so cheap. Costs me nothing, but costs me everything, all of my relationships. That love is selfish and self-seeking, it's arrogant. It's self-deprecating. It reduces me in worth. It's jealous. It's suspicion. It's suspicious. It's envious. It's greedy. It's lustful. Has what it has, but wants what it cannot have or desires to have. It's irresponsible and lazy. Wants what it wants it handed to her. And it's impatient. So what's the result? My being is restless. In this distorted understanding of love that brings me back to my disease, I am irritable, discontented, bored, and depressed and anxious. I harm our others and I harm myself. I succumb to the desire again and I act out again. Whatever that is for you, you think, you drink, you snort, you act out, whatever that is for you, it's the bondage of self. I'm right back into it. And so in this new understanding of love, I want to be of maximum usefulness to God and my fellows. I want to make spiritual progress. I want to see that my confidence starts to regrow, that I am not a bond, and I am not a prisoner to my mind, to my thoughts, to my decisions and my actions. And so the eighth principle of love being the eighth step principle, by your eighth step, you've already gone through all the others. You know, don't forget, you've gone through the others. You've gone through honesty of step one. You've gone through hope in step one. You've gone through surrender and courage in three and four. You've gone through integrity and willingness in five and six, humility in seven. And so love pursues a certain truth within you that wants you to be kinder. It wanted me to be kinder into a self-discovery that also creates a better understanding of how I can actually attain compassion and grace through this work, not what I've done before. It didn't work. You know, and yes, it could be frustrating. But I get to learn this is an embodiment of these principles. It means shoulder away from ears. You've already made the list in your step four, Kimia. Why are you dying on this hill? Your step eight, you've already made the list on your step four. It says just become willing. It just asks for willingness. And so to create a reliable foundation for my step nine and onwards to make these amends, I have to understand this principle of love as an everlasting activity. I don't just attain it through a person anymore. That has failed numerous times. That's why it's part of my log list. Every time I hold on to it, it slips, it fades, maybe for a certain period of time, but no human aid can relieve me of my problem, my spiritual malady. And how much harder I try, the more I place myself in a position to be hurt, destroyed, eviscerated. You know, and then I wonder, what happened? I can't see that I'm the tornado. So I want to bring our attention to a few references of love in our big book. In the story of, on page 10, this is Bill's story. And it's talking about this part of his disbelief, right? But then there is belief. He says, I had always believed in a power greater than myself. I had often pondered these things. I was not an atheist. Few people really are, for that means blind faith in the strange proposition that this universe originated in cipher, zero, nothing, nada, and aimlessly rushes nowhere. My intellectual heroes, the chemists, the astronomers, even the evolutionists suggest vast laws and forces at work. We can't deny. Despite contrary indications, I had little doubt that a mighty purpose and rhythm underlay all. How could there be so much of precise and immutable law and no intelligence? I simply had to believe in a spirit of universe who knew neither time nor limitation. But that was as far as I had gone. See, I pick that as my most primary understanding of love and God. And love and God are synonymous in my vocabulary today. God is the ever-encompassing idea of love. Everything is love. And everything that falls outside of this love is an invitation for love, kindness, softness, humility, strength, power, and silence. And so it says, with ministers and the world's religions, I parted right there when they talked of a God personal to me who was love, superhuman strength and direction. I became irritated and my mind snapped shut against such theory. Anybody identify with that? Closed off right away. What do you mean? How dare you speak of God? But then there's this idea of love, the limitless, the spirit of the universe. It says to Christ, I conceded the certainty of a great person not too closely followed by those who claimed him, his moral teachings most excellent. For myself, I had adopted those parts which seemed convenient and not too difficult. The rest I disregarded. What are you disregarding today? What are you disregarding in your definition of God and love? Where are you putting limitations on this relationship? Where are you still putting conditions on the power of love? That if someone meets the conditions, you will love them. Once they no longer meet those conditions, you don't. That once you meet the conditions, then you're worthy of love. And once you no longer have those conditions, you are not worthy of being seen as a human. So what is it that you're disregarding today? And I love that the rest I disregarded. What is it that is convenient for you in this word love? But I love you. But look at what I do for you. Look at all the things I've done for you. Look at all the things I'm willing to do for you. How many times I've used that as a strategy to own, have a person, have a thing, have an opportunity. Have whatever it is that I thought will basically is the limit of my happiness, joy, and life. And that's what I call love. A prisoner, a slave to a conception that's unattainable in that realm. That kind of love is never attained, has never been attainable for me. It's always ended up in loss. That very loss has brought me closer to God, the real entity and source. So I no longer buy my love at bulk anymore. I go to the source, I get it fresh every time I make a mistake, because I do. It does say God, life is gonna have its ups and downs. It does say the apparent calamity has been a boon to us. What's apparent calamity? Relapse, taking thoughts, snorting people, places, and things, right? But it says it brings me back to God, this conception of an everlasting idea of forgiveness. It created me. I know I belong to it. I know that I will go back to it. I'm here for a purpose. That purpose is very, very visible to me today. And in that visibility, there's a lot of courage. There's a lot of forgiveness. Because many of us know that ill health, falling in love, change of environment, warning of a doctor, that did not stop us. It did not stop the disease that pretends to be us either. And so it also says there's a phrase on page 54, talks about worship and love. Says we found too that we had been worshipers. What a state of mental goose flesh that used to bring on. Had we not variously worshipped people, sentiment, things, money, and ourselves? Loved it. And then, with a better motive, had we not worshipfully beheld the sunset, the sea, or a flower? Who of us had not loved something or somebody? How much did these feelings, these loves, these worships had to do with pure reason? Little or nothing. We saw at last, were not these things the tissue out of which our lives were constructed? Did not these feelings, after all, determine the course of our existence? It was impossible to say we had no capacity for faith. It was impossible to say we had no capacity for faith or love or worship. In one form or another, we had been living by faith and little else. And then the next line, of course, says, imagine life without faith. And so the reading goes on. I love that it's talking about this. It's impossible to say we have no capacity to have faith, love, or worship, devotion. Not worship of people, places, and things, this everlasting idea that we do come for a reason and purpose on this earth. And we do go back to that reason when many of us do wake up to that purpose a lot quicker every time. And so there is this infinite power in love. Infinite power in love, it says on page 56. It says he stood in the presence of infinite power and love. He had stepped from bridge to shore. For the first time, he lived in conscious companionship with his creator. Conscious companionship. sounds like love to me. Conscious companionship. Sounds like intimacy to me. Sounds like trust. Sounds like faith. Sounds like courage. Sounds like no fear. Absence of fear. Sounds like a good friend I want to be in the company of. And so on our step three, there's that phrase of thy love. You know, we made a decision to turn our minds, our thoughts, our actions, our everything. The blueprint of my life is yours, has been yours. God, I offer myself to thee, we said, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Sounds like a whole lot of trust out here, right? To build with me. It sounds like agape love. Sounds like it is so limitless that there is no fear. This power will keep me safe, relieve me of the bondage of self, because that power of love knows what my bondage is. I don't have to sit there and describe it. That I may better do thy will. I trust your will. I have a sense of respect, courtesy towards your will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help. Selflessly praying that it's my difficulties are removed from me, so I am clear path for what? For God's power, it says. God's love, it says. I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life, it says. May I do thy will always, always, always. Thy love. And so I do have a teacher, a mentor, an entity that will show me what thy love is. I didn't come into program knowing what love was. I came into program with an idea of what love was doing to me and what I've done for love and how it's always brought me to the point of insanity and death, not always in that order. I was waiting for the world to explain to me why the shit is like this. So selfish, so self-centered. I looked at all of my fellows wondering what the fuck I was doing amongst them. You are the sick ones. I was never the sick one. But you showed me love. True love. Limitless love. That's what I found in the rooms of CA. The moment I stepped into this room today, I heard my fellows say, Kimia, I love you. We love you. We love you. That's limitless love. That testimony is so, so, so loud. No dictionary can define that kind of feeling. It must be felt, my fellows. Allow your heart to open. The ideal fantasy of a person, relationship, my own Hollywood, Bollywood movie ending, my soulmate, this idea of a soulmate. I found thousands of soulmates in you. Thousands. And in this kind of love, there's neutrality. Even if you approached me in a wrongful way, I will have a rightful way to regard it. In these rooms, we stay safe, neutral towards our siblings. 13th stepping is not okay. Zero policy in my head, in my heart, in our network. But then there's a God that says the same fellow who's approaching you the wrong way needs a solution. Go the length. Tell them this is inappropriate, but thank God I can connect you to a sponsor today if you're willing. To me, that's limitless love. To me, that's going beyond what it is. We're all sick. I'm no better than you are. You know, I have to right size this humility that needs to be a part of this work. As the most intolerable, I can become the most intolerant. And I could be so tolerant towards you, but I can be intolerant towards the closest people to me, my family, my friends, my lovers, my coworkers, you know? So if I'm willing to go the length to help another person, I have to be willing to go the length to see this is a way of life. It can't just be a one-time thing. It's how you treat life. It's when you notice smaller things. You notice a child smiling. You notice the sound of laughter. You notice people loving each other, kind, being kind towards each other, and you don't die in jealousy and suspicion anymore. There's no background noise that says, of course, everybody else is gonna have it but me. No. God gives me that. I go to the source. I don't stand in water and die of thirst anymore. I am in God as God is in me. Why am I envious of something that is within, deep down within? That limitlessness is within all of us if we're willing to really accept it for what it is. And so life becomes kinder. We become kinder towards each other. We start working with those that are incarcerated, those that have done some really messed up things, and some of us are among have been amongst that list. There's nothing that separates us. I can work with a prisoner just the same way I would work with anyone who's not behind bars. The willingness to go beyond those conditions, it allows access, it gives power, it shows usefulness. Thy love, we said. Thy way of life, we said. Thy power, we said. Show me more. It also says on page 86, 83, there's a long period of reconstruction ahead. You would remember this as step nine instructions. It's not a coincidence. On step eight, this principle of love is really being revealed to me. I'm understanding a new definition of love. I am to remove the debris. So in step nine, I'm being told this is going to be a long road of reconstruction. We must take the lead. Yes, we're becoming leaders, heart-centered leaders. A remorseful mumbling that we're sorry won't fit the bill at all. Guess what? I don't go to people saying, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry anymore. It doesn't fit the bill. We take responsibility. That's love. It's unconditional love. Says we ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it, being very careful not to criticize them. That's love, not criticizing others. Being careful not to. Sounds like consideration, sounds like tact. Their defects may be glaring, but the chances are that our own actions are partly responsible. Yes, they are. I no longer disregard the responsibility I have in every single situation, and I'm no longer stuck on that hill where I keep dying expectations and I'm right. Rather be right than dead. We'll take death over being wrong. False pride, false ego doesn't want to be deflated. So we clean house with the family, we clean house with life, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. So now we have the tools to access this inaccessible love, and my disease has now become so vast, I can actually access it through a creator of my understanding. I get to pick. A way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. And it says spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. We have to live it. We have to live it. It says love and tolerance is our code. And why is it I disregard that? The moment my family gets too sick for me, love and tolerance goes out the door. But my fellows call me and I'm already on that step call, right? Where's my patience and kindliness? Love and tolerance is my code in every single part of my life. God is there to see this and not as in this ominous presence as in the past, the Punisher Lord. No, it's this presence that holds me and says, soften that space between your eyebrows, Kimya. Stop rolling your eyes from inside so much they can still see. And so we cease fighting anything or anyone. When I cease fighting anything or anyone, I am in love. I see the smaller things. I look at the garden and I see the baby tomatoes that are going to come along. And I'm like, oh my God, my life, these look like earrings. Smaller things, just a moment of like, ha-ha-ha-ness. Lightness. Yes. And then God still brings these smaller things to my life, like a tiny little mole. Didn't know how blind they were until I had to rescue one. And then people are like, but moles are not good for our farms. I'm like, moles are good for your life if you allow them to live. Just let them go, and just smaller things. You notice smaller things. That is when I cease fighting everything and everyone. And so my liar in my head is not constantly producing more bullshit for me to gnaw on. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and snacks. Insanity would return. And so, in this definition of love, there is no retaliation. There is no holding you hostage. There is no inferiority. There is no setting the price that you cannot meet. In this type of love, there's vastness, there's limitlessness. And there's this idea that these are our watchwords. I will throw another reference from this beautiful book. It's all about love. I would love to read this book just from that lens any day, but you can do that with any of these principles. You will find them, and they're all encompassing. And love is in every single step you have taken. And on page 118, it's talking about a situation where you have a heated conversation with someone, says your husband, anyone, life, inside your head. When you have a heated conversation with that jackass that just drove by you and didn't signal, and you're 30 minutes later, you're still like taking him to court, you know? A heated conversation, it really just be with me and my liar too. It says no matter what the subject, it should be the privilege of either. I say it's the privilege of me as a person who has recovery in this book. To smile sounds like God is trying to break apart the tension in my face. To smile and say, this is getting serious. I'm sorry I got disturbed. Let's talk about it later. And you know what? I say, let's talk about it never. Let's talk about it never. Yeah, because every time I talk about it, it seems to have set off this phenomena of craving and this allergy that I have. I really need to reach for that anger, and love goes out the door real quick. No, love needs to stay. Let's talk about it never. And then it says later, patience, tolerance, understanding, and love are the watchwords. These four words imprinted in my head. Patience, tolerance, understanding, love. Patience, tolerance, understanding, love. It's a mantra of its own. It says, show them these things, show the world these things in yourself, and they will be reflected back to you. Live and let live is the rule. To me, that's love. That's a God-centered love right there. Live and let live. Live your life. Know exactly where it is that you need to show up for your helpfulness and let somebody else live theirs, even if it means they're gonna have to die, even if it means they have to go to the brink of insanity too, to remove those conditions. And just like there, it says, if you show willingness to remedy your own defects, there will be very little need to criticize others. I wanna close with this. This idea of vastness and limitless love that's accessible to all of us. There is a reference to this when we read the fear instructions as a better way. It says, perhaps there is a better way. I see that as love. There is a better way. There's a way to love, to smile, even when you're most agitated and agitating. Step away from it. Think about something funny. I don't know. Break the cycle of thought that makes you squeeze that space between your eyebrows and squeeze your shoulders and tense up around your heart, and you just veil it with thousands of the shields, and it still doesn't shield you. It says we're on a different basis of trusting and relying upon God, love, basis of trusting and relying upon love, forgiveness, kindness. We trust infinite love rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role God assigns, love assigns. Just to the extent as do we think love would have us and humbly rely on God, does love enable us to match calamity with serenity? And it sounds all great and very meditative when it's spoken, but in reality, it means right in the middle of that thought you've taken that is taking you to your drug of choice, to insanity and death, that you have to be willing to say, God, I offer myself to thee. Or bring whatever prayer, the fear prayer comes next. This is what I like doing. When I know that I've taken the thought, that I know it's going to take me back to the misery of depression, I have to come to this prayer and interject right away. We ask God to remove our fear and direct our attention to what God would have us be. At once we commence to outgrow our fear. What would you have me be? Every time God says, be love, be kindness, be tolerance, be forgiving. It's the same thing in our sick person's prayer. It says we ask God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience we would cheerfully grant a sick person. We would cheerfully grant a really sick fellow. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, "This is a sick person. How can I be helpful to this person? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done." And I say, God, save me from being anything that is not love. God, save me from being anything that is not love. God, save me from being anything that is not love. That's my mantra. Because anger is just the first of many I'm going to take. And so in acceptance, forgiveness, and in unconditional love, I get to pray for the unforgivable. That also includes me. My fellows, we're all united in that power. I hope that you will trust your ability to find that power in prayer and meditation. This is what has worked for me. A huge part of my recovery is relying upon these principles, but also the practices they have to come to, come and they, the practices they need, the practices that I need to invest in. How to practice the principle of love is taking ownership of my actions, being accountable. Removing anger or resentment and making things right whenever possible, knowing that I need to sit in that for however long to get there. Got an opportunity to meditate with a monk yesterday who went to a monastery at the age of 11, only to meet this person 35 years later. What I got to really observe in his presence was how attractive it is to be in calmness. How attractive it is to be in that sense of just with his softened gaze the whole time. I could imagine him as a child going through a lot of training and discipline to be where he is. He's still learning, you know. But the most attractive thing to him, to me, from him was this vastness of his calmness, vastness of the love he had every time he was asked a question with so much patience, with so much love, with so much humility. And I hope to be able to transfer that and continue to have that in my actions and my thoughts. And hopefully, this talk has transferred something to you that makes it accessible to you as well. Thank you for the opportunity to remain in love. And I look forward to hearing you. Thank you all so much.